Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome to a sneezy edition of the Addicted to Social Media podcast. I'm Neil Weiser, and you'll excuse me if I sneeze very loudly. I've got a bit of the cold coming.
Hey, maybe it's not like Fozzie Bear.
Yeah, or something like that, but I'm here. So if I'm sneezy, I guess I'm here with Grumpy, or I'd rather call you
Goofy.
Dopey. Goofy wasn't one of the seven dwarfs.
Yeah, I'm Seth Goldstein.
And unfortunately, our Snow White Jody Rains is lost in the forest today. She's actually out at an event, so she couldn't make it, but she will be back next time.
Yep, exactly.
And so, let's get to it.
Yes. So what's going on with Mr. Jobs?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of interesting news in the Apple world today. There seems to be always interesting news at Apple. But this week, there were actually two really interesting stories that broke in the news earlier this week. First is Apple's quarterly earning reports, which were astronomical. Apple, in the last quarter of 2010, generated $26 billion, that's B as in billion.
That's B as in billion, yeah.
B as in $1 billion in revenue last quarter. I mean, it's just an astounding, jaw-dropping number, and it's amazing. And then the very next day, or actually I think they did – oh, I'm sorry. I have my announcements reversed. That was on Tuesday when they announced earnings. On Monday, probably because it was a holiday in the United States for our international listeners and we did not have the stock markets weren't open, Steve Jobs announced that he is taking another medical leave.
His third, I think.
Yeah, I think actually – well, I think it's technically his fourth. I think he took one in the 80s, but it's his third in the last couple of years. And I got to say, I just want to make a couple quick comments about that, but I really want to talk about the impact it's going to have on Apple. But the two comments I want to make is, first of all, we wish Steve Jobs well. He is obviously a visionary. We never wish bad upon anybody, but it's just a terrible thing that he's got. And I heard an interview with a physician familiar with these types of cases and with the liver transplant issues that he had and his type of cancers. And based upon pictures that were released of him at an event a couple of weeks ago – I'm sorry, about 3 months ago, I'm sorry – the diagnosis was just not good. And
Were you watching Tech News today?
No, I missed it. What did they have to say?
They had one of the people in their chat room – she goes by the name Dr. Mom. She's a physician at Hofstra, and she was pointing out how the pad on our hands.
Oh yeah, I think it may have been the same person.
Yeah,
it sounds like the same interview.
Yeah, well, you were probably watching Tech News on the Twit Network.
Oh yeah, it was okay.
Because they were interviewing her, and they said how he's really emaciated. The guy's got to be pigging out, and the fact that his doctor's pretty much saying most likely eat. And he's not holding the weight.
Yeah, well, it's a problem with his liver. He's stuck. For those of you who don't know, he had a liver transplant as a result of, I guess, complications of his pancreatic cancer. Yeah, and what happens is the chemo that he's taking to kill the pancreatic cancer.
I don't think he's taking chemo. I don't think there is chemo. She said that there isn't actually chemo or radiation that really does the job.
Oh, okay. So,
whatever they were doing, I think you just take things out.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, the point is that it affects the liver, and the drugs that he was taking to prevent rejection of the liver actually create a better environment for the pancreatic cancer. So he's really stuck in a very nasty catch 22. And like I said, we wish him well, but and we keep our fingers crossed. It's such a shame. I mean, you get all these bad people in the world, and there are people who hate Steve Jobs, but you have to admit
hate's a tough word. I mean, I'm not a fan. I think he's pompous. I think that, he's brilliant, but I'm not a fan of Steve Jobs. But you can't deny the fact that I don't hate him. I might disagree with his policies, but also, the guy is freaking brilliant, and that's all there is to it. You like him or not, he's brilliant.
Yeah, but my point is that he's brilliant in a positive way. Of course, he's trying to monopolize markets and things like that, but that's business for you. But my point is that he's creating incredible products and services, and But that actually leads us into the actual discussion is that what impact would his health have on Apple and social media as an extension to that?
That's an interesting fact, but also I think that social media is what's going to keep him honest in the way that, he's the CEO of a publicly traded company, a very big publicly traded company, a ginormous one, And, you know, he obviously wants privacy in these matters. But when you're the CEO and this much of a, you know, the crucial aspect of the company, you know, I think social media and this the board is going to make him really come out and be honest with, you know, his prognosis, like what's going on. I mean, I think ultimately Apple will survive. I think that it's better, they're better off now than they were after the first, you know, after Steve left the first time, because, you know, they have an idea of what they want to be, and it's not a PC. Whereas before, they tried to mimic Microsoft, and Microsoft barely can mimic itself. So why would someone else try and do that? But I think social media is what's going to really keep them honest.
Well, I don't think it's a question of keeping honest. What I'm referring to is if Steve Jobs were to leave Apple for whatever reason permanently, you know, what is the impact on the business and social media? And the reason I'm tying these two things together is obviously he's the visionary that drives the company, mm-hmm. but he's got what's the fellow's name? Tim Cook.
Tim Cook, COO.
I mean, he's been CEO for a number of years, and I believe he just re-upped for the major salary boost as well. And he's run the company. You know, COOs typically run more of the day-to-day operations of the various divisions of the company. But you know, he's been very hands-on with running the company for quite a while now, and so a lot of the credit of what's happening with Apple is shared with him. So I think it puts the company in a good place. Plus, their product pipeline has got to be probably maybe 5 years outlook. So I really believe that we can continue to see revolutionary products being put out by Apple for at least the next couple of years. And the reason that I keep on coming back to his impact on social media is because people are using these products to access social media, and these products have been a major advancement in the proliferation of social media over the last couple of years.
Especially with Twitter and stuff. I mean, and maybe it's a reach to just attribute it to Apple, but I mean, Apple started the idea of a smartphone. I mean, the way it is now. I mean, BlackBerry's been around for a while, and, you know, they were smartphones, but nothing was quite like the iPhone. I mean, iPhone's the iPhone. I mean, I'm not going to try and belittle it, but I mean, the Androids are out there now, and they're all, in my opinion, now contributing to this ecosystem of social media. But I mean, to Apple's credit, they started the fad, they started the trend and all that. And honestly, I mean, what's kind of ironic is they're making all of these great, you know, helping us access this new technology very, very much. They're really at the forefront of it, but they really suck at building the social media. I mean, I revel in the ability to bring up the ill-fated social network called Ping that resided not on the internet but in iTunes, had no connection to the outside world, and it was pretty much garbage. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of ironic that we're talking about Steve Jobs' impact on social media when it's more his products aiding social media than really his impact, because his impact is not really there.
Well, no, his impact is considerable because the mobile revolution, especially when you take a look at the statistics, this mobile revolution that we are still in the infancy of is enabling people to be connected and interconnected really just about anywhere on the world.
Exactly.
With small mobile devices, and Apple is leading the
charge. I find it humorous that, you know, he is leading the charge, yet he trips over his own shoelaces every now and then.
Yeah, well, you have to take a look at, I mean,
others have done it too. Yeah.
Well, that's not my point. My point is, I mean, you know, Apple's not been very successful with social media up to this point, but, you know, take a look at a company like Google, for example. I mean, brilliant people who clearly understand the value of interconnectedness. I mean, that's how the whole PageRank system came into being.
Yes.
They're interconnecting web pages, not people now, but it's like there seems to be a disconnect with the connecting of people as opposed to discrete pages. It's all
exactly. And I mean, where Apple, you know, strives in UI, you know, user experience and user, you know, UX, user, you know, all that stuff. Uh-huh. Google sucks. I mean, Google has no design. I mean, they're engineers. Whereas I think Apple is a lot more right-brained. Google's a lot more left-brained. Mm-hmm. And I mean, every company is different. All the more power to them. I love Google. I mean, I think Apple's pretty neat. They make some really good-looking hardware. I mean, the laptops are gorgeous. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well,
so.
We'll see how it all plays out. You know, it'd be interesting to see how what happens if Jobs does step down, how Apple's relationship with Facebook will happen, especially in light of what Facebook's new funding raising.
And also, speaking about absolute genius, I mean, mm-hmm. Zuckerberg is definitely one of the most brilliant people ever. I mean, he's
I think he's more shrewd than brilliant, but that's a different topic of a different conversation.
Did you know that? And I think in Esquire, his wardrobe was, you know, voted like the worst ever. I mean, the guy meets the president of the United States in jeans and a T-shirt and flip flops.
Well, you're a billionaire doesn't mean you have any class. So
exactly, I just think it's kind of funny that this guy is really shrewd and kind of, you know, but actually he's brilliant, Neil. With his interactions and how, I mean, he still screws stuff up, but like, the idea that Facebook is as big as it is, we might as well mention that they're now, I think the latest count is 650,000, millions.
About 650 million.
That is, where's the United States? I think, are we,
population?
Yeah, I think we're around, I mean, are we in the millions or are we in the billions? We're not billion.
Dude, I mean, all right, before you jump the shark on this little statistic. Yeah. The U.S. Census was just – results of the 2010 U.S. Census were released last month, and there are about 308 million Americans counted in the United States. I think there's probably about 10 million more than that of uncounted, but that's a different story.
308 million.
Yeah.
So Facebook's bigger than America.
Still trailing behind India and China, but they're
– One. Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, if they're as big as China, that means – Yeah, you gotta think about this. I mean, to be on Facebook, you have to have connectivity. That's saying that 650,000 people at least can access a live
million.
With an internet connection.
650 million people.
It's a million, sorry. I don't know. I can't get – it's just a big number. It just shows how connected the world is. It's
incredible. Yeah, and it's interesting because there were also stats about the global internet population that were released recently too. And, you know, they've obviously got something like half of that – half of the people on the internet supposedly are on Facebook or whatever. It'll continue to grow. I mean, Facebook's still, you know, major, and that's a different story. But we're getting really off topic because we actually wanted to discuss was the Goldman Sachs investment, which I thought was really interesting. So for those of you who don't follow such things, Goldman Sachs, one of the premier investment banks in the United States, couple weeks, announced that they are leading a major funding deal for Facebook, investing something like $450 million of their own money. They put together another deal with a Russian company, which is putting another $50 million
in. Isn't it Skynet? That's not Skynet. It's something like that.
Digital Sky Technologies, I think it is.
Yeah.
But they're going to be helping Facebook raise an additional $1 billion on top of that. But the reason that we're talking about it, because we've spoken about this previously, is because Goldman Sachs just announced that they are excluding their American clients from investing in Facebook.
Yeah, and a lot of speculation is that they because the American media is following it so closely that they're afraid of SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, scrutiny with the sales. So they're just saying, forget about America.
Yeah, but you want to know,
they're kind of drawing more attention to it.
Yeah, but you want to know something? I have some friends who are on the Ferrari subscription plan and, you know, get a new Ferrari every year, and unfortunately I'm not, but and I've spoken to them, and bottom line is when you have that kind of money and, you know, it doesn't matter what Goldman Sachs says. If he wanted to invest in it, he could invest in it through Goldman. They've just structured it in such a way to avoid scrutiny.
Yeah, but honestly, I mean, if you have enough money, you could probably make an appointment with Zuckerberg and invest money in directly. I mean, they're not a publicly traded firm. I mean, you could make. I mean, if you're well enough connected and you have the money to invest, you can probably invest even sidestep Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, but in all honesty, I don't think they would even take your call unless you're willing to put up $100 million minimum, probably.
Well, if you have $100 million that says it's just lying around there getting dust on it, go for it.
Yeah, but if you know, if I had $100 million, maybe I'd just buy a trip to a vacation to the space station or something. I think it costs about that these days.
No, I think it's less than that, actually.
No, I think it's like $50 million. I'm just being facetious.
Can you imagine having $50 million just lying around? Hell, give me $1 million, then use the rest. Anyhow... Another thing in Facebook news is that Facebook – this has now been reversed, but Facebook earlier this week, I think, or maybe that end of last week, had allowed apps on their ecosystem.
Third-party applications.
Third-party apps to not only access the stuff that they've already been able to get, you know, your demographics, your friend list, and all that stuff. They now allow them to get your email and your phone number. Now, this has been reversed.
Not only that, but your address, your personal address as well.
Now, that's been reversed, and Facebook's saying, whoa, maybe we shouldn't have done that, or let's reassess things. But here's the thing also, is that, and this is people should be aware, that anything you put on Facebook, just assume that it's public, and this is how it is. I mean, so if you don't want your address to be up there, don't put it up there. It's that simple. Just don't put it up there.
Well, I got news for you. I mean, there are ways to find out who you are and where you live through other sources than just Facebook. There was, I think I mentioned it in a previous episode, that there were some postgrad students who had done a research project with Amazon, and just based on certain purchases and some other seemingly very obscure information, they were actually able to find out who made purchases using publicly available databases combined with that. I mean, the ability to
out there. But at the end of the day, right now we're talking about Facebook, where 650 million people are on. You know, they have to watch where they go. And one thing to their credit is they opened it up to Facebook developers. But then they've very quickly, for Facebook especially, is they rescinded that and they reversed their course and really looked into the legitimacy of what they were doing. So
yeah, well, for Facebook to turn around, I think it took them about three days.
Which is pretty good for them.
For them, that's light speed to turn around on these types of issues. So I do give them credit for doing that. But it's just another sign and symbol that if you have any doubt as to how Facebook views your privacy, I mean, it just once again, your privacy to you on Facebook simply doesn't exist. They're going to take all your personal data, and they're going to use it to make money. And that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe me, then go ahead and put all your personal data up there. And
you'll see.
You'll see.
But honestly, just, and a lot of people have started doing, my little sister who's 14 is, she makes stuff up. She has fun with it. I mean, I guess it kind of goes against the Facebook, terms of service, but she doesn't put her full name up there. She abbreviates it. She makes up funny things in the movie section. She doesn't put her address up there. I mean, she's very – I think a lot of the younger kids, the teenagers nowadays, are really getting smart about what they put up there. I think it's everybody else that we have to worry about.
Well, I mean, it's great that they are. I think they're finally learning, which is good because, how many times can you get busted for having pictures of you smoking pot, on Facebook before you're going to get in trouble? I think people are starting to finally figure it out, but it's like, it's a shame. I mean, Facebook does so much so well, and they do so much that should be emulated. And I just wish that they would just, not do this with the fire. I mean, let me ask you a question. For $1 a year, would you pay Facebook $1 a year to protect your privacy?
Yeah. I shouldn't have to pay them $1 a year to protect my privacy, but I would.
Yeah, because I had this conversation with someone the other day, and they were – basically the idea was that if 650 million people paid Facebook $1 a year, not that people in every country can afford the dollar because it's for different valuations, but that would be several hundred million dollars in additional revenue. The problem is that I told them is that, Facebook's going to take your money, and then they're going to take your credit card information that you use to pay for the money, for the fee, and they're going to share that anyway. So it's like it doesn't matter. You're not going to win.
Exactly. And a lot of people have heard of the open source Facebook called Diaspora and how it started on Kickstarter. Kickstarter is a way, place for everyday people to kind of help fund upstart projects and whatnot. And you don't really get a stake in the company or anything. You might get pre-released access to a site or something like that. But you can give everything from $1 up to as much money as you want. But anyhow, the first Kickstarter-funded film is now heading to the Sundance Film Festival. Which is kind of neat to see that, people are really using this service, Kickstarter and others like it, to really get their ideas off the ground and, share, be able to really iterate on what they can do over the internet. It's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting because basically it's crowdsourcing but with funding. And Kickstarter isn't the first company to do that. There have actually been several companies that have been trying to use crowdsourcing to raise money, but they were doing it mostly in the pre-Facebook era. So now things are a little bit different. I think people are more disposed to get engaged with services like that. But I think it's great. Having come from the film business myself, I used to work in Hollywood at Paramount and Warner Brothers in a previous life. And, you know, seeing how money was spent and how difficult it is for independent filmmakers to raise money, I think these types of services are wonderful. And it's not just for the filmmakers. I mean, it's, you know, it's
voters, anything. If you have an idea or a project you want funded, and even if it's like you just need $100 to get something off the ground, you can raise $100 there. Someone thinks it's a great idea. They'll help you out. It's like having a way to say, hey, I have this idea. Does anyone else think it's a good idea? I'll do it if I just need to buy server space or just need to do X, Y, and Z. And it gives you the space to explain why you need the money. And, you know, you're able to reward your investors a little bit, you know, saying, hey, you know, you'll get the first access to the product when it goes live. Or you don't have to. You can just say, hey, I'll give you a T-shirt, you know, or nothing at all. It's to say, I'll send you a thank you note, you know.
Yeah, but it's pretty yeah, cool.
It's really neat. So, I mean, and then there's also, we have a link to a infographic, a guide to Kickstarter and crowdfunding. It's a link in our show notes as well. So,
hey, you know what we should do?
What?
Maybe we should see if we can raise some money for A2SM on Kickstarter.
Maybe we should.
You know what'll probably happen? We'll probably owe them money.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, hey, if you want to donate money, there is a donate button. I think I put it on the new site. There's a donate button. You can donate to us through PayPal, but I think they take their cut. So
actually, I don't remember. I had unfortunately missed the last episode. But yeah.
Putting out an atom bomb at work.
Yeah, oh God, it was nuts last week. But you had just mentioned about the new site. For those of you who don't know, we're actually in the process of redesigning our A2SM website. So if it looks a little clunky and kludgy or some strange things are going on, I just want to explain that that's what's happening.
Yeah, it's just pretty much Seth fooling around on there trying to get things to look right. So, excuse me. So anyhow, here's an interesting thing. In California, they are, and I'm sure this will go across the United States at some point, the judicial system is thinking or is in the process of passing a law saying that the police, if they pull you over and they suspect anything, they don't need to get a warrant to go into your smartphone and look around and snoop around. So whether or not you're doing anything bad or not, they don't need a warrant or they will not need a warrant in the future in California and probably elsewhere soon to check your smartphone.
Yeah.
So you know, Ars Technica had a good article about that.
You know, I mean, I think that's fascinating. It actually ties in nicely with our Facebook topic. But yeah. I'm stunned that this is happening in California.
Well,
and I don't think it'll last. I think it'll get struck down. If it goes to the Supreme Court or whatever, I think there's a very high likelihood it gets struck down because it violates – And I apologize, I'm not the attorney, my wife is, but there's
a Fourth Amendment unlawful search and seizure.
Is that what it is, the Fourth Amendment?
Wow. Okay. I just channeled the lawyer. Wow. But cool. It is the Fourth Amendment. And if I'm wrong, guys, please let me know. I will correct myself in the next podcast.
It's one of the amendments. But the point is, you do have a point there, and it'll be a very interesting thing if it happens. But what is your recommendation? How you might be able to?
And one more thing, also, I mean, it does kind of go with. I mean, they can search your bag, like your pocketbook, without a warrant. I think now, so it's just another thing that's in your pocketbook. So I kind of get to see where they're coming from, but I also don't like what. I don't like how it is. So here's the tip. On Ars Technica, and there's a link in our show notes, it says you should encrypt your smartphone. Now, the word encrypt, they don't necessarily mean, like, you know, hash it and, you know, put it behind massive, you know, coding. They're saying simply put it – whoa.
You right there?
Yeah, that was you, wasn't it?
What was what?
Anyhow, I heard some crunching of potato chips. Anyhow, what you should do is put a password on. I mean, there's that little thing where you drag your finger across and create a design that unlocks that you can put in, a little pin number.
Whatever phones they have, they know. Turn on the password, put it in there,
and that way, you know, it will impede law enforcement and any ill-fated thief from accessing your content on your phone.
Definitely,
it's a smart thing to do. So.
Yeah, and you should do that. Honestly, people should be doing that with all their computers and devices wherever they are, to protect them.
I'm gonna call you out on this. Do you password protect your smartphone?
You know what? Everything actually is password protected except for my iPhone.
I don't go get Neil's iPhone. Actually, I go one better. Not only do I have my phone automatically locking every 20 minutes. Once I turn it on and unlock it, it stays unlocked for 20 minutes. But certain applications within my Droid X if the screen turns off, it reenacts a password. So like my email, if I hand someone my phone to play around with, and it's unlocked, but I don't want them to go into my mail. I want them to go into certain things. So I have passwords on those things.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Seth? You've motivated me, and as we speak, I am turning on the password on my iPhone.
And actually, people are saying, well, it's a pain in the butt. I mean, if you just do the little finger dragging thing, it really isn't that bad. I mean, you get used to it after a while. Typing in a long, crazy password, yeah, that would become a real pain.
Well, you only have four choices on the iPhone.
Yeah, but on Android, you can actually type in an alphanumeric and symbol password.
Oh, really? You know, a friend of mine has something on his iPad. The iPad also just has a four-digit passcode, but he was doing something. It was like 10 digits long. I don't know what the app was.
But here's the thing. Honestly, you just want to impede somebody, but, I mean, ultimately, you don't want to impede yourself. I mean, you use this thing constantly. You don't want to make it so hard that you can't log into the damn thing. So, I mean, be smart about it. Lock your device, but don't lock yourself out of your device. Then I'll just laugh at you. So anyhow, our last story before we go into our picks, a Pew Research report says that 53% of internet users believe social media affects politics. This is very interesting because if you think about it, I mean, Obama, when he was running for president, really used social media and really got out there and, you know, hit the interwebs, for lack of a better word. And that very well could have, you know, helped them, you know, reach the more internet-connected generations. I mean, I know the GOP used it in the last election and tweeted and put out figures and facts. You know, what do you think, Neil?
Well, look, anyone who doesn't think that social media is affecting politics doesn't understand what's going on out there. I mean, Barack Obama owes his election to social media. I'm not saying that it was the cause of him being elected, but it would enable people to communicate, coordinate, and you know, there's enough case studies on the Obama campaign. I mean, it was just brilliant, especially, you know, just 2 years ago, how much social media has changed now. I can't wait to see what happens in the next election, but they made brilliant use of social media, and it is the wave of the future, and I've spoken about this before and about the impact that social media is going to have on politics, especially, and I think this is going to start happening very, very soon, where we start seeing political parties being influenced in other countries through social media, and that's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see this, how not just social media, but how the internet in general affects stuff. With Iran and stuff that's going on in Iran, and currently with what's going on in Tunisia, how the internet and Twitter and Facebook, how they're both enabling and disabling actions. It's really, really a new world we're in. So anyhow, from that, let's move into our picks. Neil. What do you got for us?
Well, actually, I have two picks today. I just thought I would take advantage of the fact that Jody wasn't here and have to. And they are related to the iPad. Sorry about that, guys. Like Seth.
I'll survive.
I just happen to like it. The first is an app. It's called GoodReader. And what it is a PDF reader app for the iPad, but it allows you to mark up an iPad and then export that document. I'm sorry, mark up a PDF and export that document to anyone else. And when they open it, they will see that markup there. Yeah. And I've been looking for an app that would do this for a while because I constantly come across PDFs, ebooks in PDF format and other things that I want to read, but I often don't because I have to print it out and I try not to print anything anymore and waste paper. But I like I try not to waste paper, but I like marking things up and making notations. I mean, if you take a look at the books that I read, I use all those little sticky tabs with the colored tabs.
You're one
and
of
stuff.
Those people.
Oh my God! It looks like the end, the spines of the book, not the spines, the other side of the book look like they're all shredded with multicolor rainbow stuff because I mark things up so much.
Wow.
But, so this was pretty cool, and I really enjoyed it. I don't remember what I paid for it. I think this might be free, or it was a couple bucks. But it's got some actually very decent management tools in it. Allows you to manage all your files. It's pretty good, and I'll just send it to Dropbox and other servers and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
And actually, your next one is actually not just for the iPad. So
yeah, So I thought you would appreciate that a little bit
I
too.
Do.
It's actually called the HTC Capacitive Stylus. And actually, it's interesting. This was manufactured, I think, by another company and whose name unfortunately escapes me. And I haven't been able to track it down. I got it off of Amazon. And what it is, I like doing a lot of drawing and other precision work that requires precision. And when you're on the iPad, the finger just isn't precise enough, you know? And I hear some jokes out there.
But, you drive the finger just precise enough.
Yeah, so I have actually gotten several different types of iPad stylus, or maybe it's style eye. And the tips of them is this little rubber nub.
Oh, that, I can hear a lot of jokes now.
Yeah, it's this little tacky rubber nub, and it's fat, so you can't get that precise line in there. I didn't call it a nipple, I called it a nub. That's what it's called. But also, when you're dragging it across your screen, because it's tacky, it tacks across the screen. You don't get that smooth slide across the screen. So finally, a friend of mine recommended this product for me, and it was ridiculously expensive for what it is. It's basically – it looks like a pen, but at the very tip of it, it's got this little tiny plastic disc that's transparent with a little red dot in the middle of it, and it's designed for devices that use these capacitive screens like some of the smartphones out there. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to do some precision work with a stylus. Now, it's a little weird because you have to hold it on a specific angle, and I'm a little annoyed because it didn't even come with a cap, and this thing –
own one?
Yeah, I bought one. Oh. I need to, but it doesn't even come with a cap, and this little plastic – piece disc, the way it hangs off the end there. I mean, if this thing doesn't break in the next week, you know.
How much is it, Neil?
Well, I paid 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago about $22 for this thing. Yeah, it was ridiculous, but I just needed to do it. And although in researching the item for the podcast, I see it's now down to $14.99.
Yeah, the link will be in the show notes.
Yeah, and I'm a little annoyed about that, but they have a very nice picture of it, and you can see what that tip is. But let me tell you something: if you guys get it, which it's a pretty cool device, there are it's exactly identical, with the exception it says HTC, as another device out there. But and I'll try to track down the name of that manufacturer. But you have to order through some site through PayPal, using PayPal through like China.
Yeah, I've heard about it. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I'm just. Like I said, I mean, it's kind of fragile,
yeah.
And you have to be at just the right angle when you use it. All things being equal, it's better than nothing, and eventually Apple will come out with their own stylus, and
it'll be very pretty.
It'll look cool, I'm sure.
Exactly. I love how we're trying to go back to styluses now, like back to what Palm originated. Whatever.
You need it for the precision work.
You do. So anyhow, my pick of the week is a little app made by Gina Trapani. She's a developer. She's on This Week in Google on the Twit Network.
Gina actually did this app?
This is her first interlude into the Android apps.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yes, this is just for Android, so touche, Neil. But it's called todolist.txt, the TXT, Touch Beta. Essentially what it is it's using she had a batch script, a little terminal. I can't get into it. It's too technical. But essentially, it's a to-do list script for her computer.
Okay.
This attaches to this which outputs into a text file, your to-do list for the day. And it lets you do all the to-do list kind of things like order and put things in certain topics and stuff. But this app actually has an interface on it. And what the best part is that it syncs to your Dropbox account. And I haven't downloaded it yet. I'm downloading it after the podcast. But it downloads to it syncs with your Dropbox, so you can then edit it on the computer through the text field, or you can go back and use it via your phone. So it's a neat thing. I'm currently using Remember the Milk, which I love. It's a great thing, but I actually pay for it, which is not, you know, it's not bad. I'll pay a few bucks for it a year, but it's a neat thing. It's not on the Android App Store yet. You can find it over at smarterware.org. It's the first, I think right now it's the most recent post. That's her blog, and you just download the APK or you can scan the barcode and have it go into your phone that way. You do need to, for Android users, you do need to go into your settings and allow third-party non-marketer authorized apps on your phone. You can look that up or you can always you know, find me on Twitter and I'll explain it to you at Seth Goldstein. And I'll explain to you how to do that. But anyhow, okay. Shall I wrap this thing up?
Well, yeah, wait, let me ask you a question, though. Yeah. I'm wondering why she doesn't use services like Evernote.
She does. But she does. But the thing is that it's, I mean, for the to-do list, I kind of get, she's a coder by trade. She codes up stuff. And, I mean, Evernote, to me, is not a good to-do list thing. I need something that I can write the tasks. I mean, I love Remember the Milk. It's great. It syncs to everything.
What did you say, rate the task?
You rate the task. It was in the priority, number one, two, three. Also, you can assign it to come up on a certain day. And this is just another geeky – this is more geekiness. I mean, some people prefer things in the to-do list in a text file. It also keeps track of, you know, all your completed tasks in a text file. So you can go back and see what you did all year.
Well, that's good. That's
yeah,
cool.
It's a neat little app. I mean, I'm going to investigate it. I'll let everyone know what I think of it next week, most likely. So
basically, it's a real task. It's trying to be a real task manager, whereas Evernote is really just
everything.
A service that you can just upload just about anything to the web, and it keeps it. It's really good with syncing across all your devices.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like you said, it's like Notepad, so it doesn't have those additional features.
Yeah, and Evernote's like a big Notepad where you put everything in it. So
that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I pay for Evernote, and I love it. Have you ever paid for Evernote yet, Neil?
No. Why do you pay for Evernote?
Because I get more space and it encrypts my transaction back and forth.
Oh.
Yeah. I was storing some mission critical stuff in Evernote for the longest time. So I wanted to make sure it was more secure. I mean, it's a great company. I'd love to support, you know, good companies. You know, I think it's like $30 a year or something like that, you know.
You know it would be cool if a company like Evernote and say Dropbox merged.
Ooh. Actually, another thing, a quick thing is, Dropbox had a scavenger hunt this past week, where it put out some clues, and if you answered it, you got your account upgraded to 1 gigabyte.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. Yeah,
it was pretty neat. I didn't have the patience or the time to really look into it, but who knows? Anyhow, Sniffles, let's take us out.
Okay. Well, listen. Let's tell everyone.
Oh, that's right. Don't take us out yet. Okay. We want to hear from you guys. Last week we had a note from a guy in Spain, and we want to hear from you guys.
That was great. The fact that we're, you know, I know we've got some listeners overseas in Europe, in England, and I think in Denmark or Germany. It's great that people are listening. To those of you out there in England, Denmark, or Germany, or anywhere else in the world, thank you so much for listening. And reach out to us, please. Let us know what's happening. I mean, it's wonderful that we're hearing from you people and we're making friends. I don't mean to say you people, but you know what I'm saying. You people. But, you know, that's what social media is all about, and making friends, and we love it. So
yeah, we also want you – so definitely if you have Google Voice and you have free international calling, or you're in the United States, give us a call at 478-2SM118. That's 478-227-6118. We'd love to play your voicemails on the show. We've yet to get one, so maybe you'll be the first inaugural one. That'd be awesome.
Right.
You can email us at editors@a2sm.com, and thank you for everyone who's been saying that my levels have been a little high lately. I do apologize. I got a new mic, and I'm trying to figure out how to use it.
I thought it was your hormone levels.
Who knows? I'll leave that one alone. You can also follow us on Twitter at @a2sm. Neil, you think you're way too funny. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/addictedtosocialmedia. I think Neil's cold medicine is affecting his brain. And also, we want you guys to write for us. We're starting to reenact the blogging aspect of A2SM. We went on a little bit of sabbatical and only really did podcasts for the past 6 or so months.
Yeah.
But we really are trying to get people to start writing for us on a regular basis. So email us, editors@a2sm. Find us. We're going to tell you where you can find me, Neil, and Jody on social media. I don't think that was a correctly worded sentence, but anyhow. And we'll set you up with an account on A2SM, and you can post for us.
Yeah, and I just want to point out, you know, we're starting to branch out with the Addicted To brand a little bit, and we may have mentioned that. Seth is doing Addicted To
web design.
That's right. And
we've only had two podcasts, or three, and we're going to do another one soon, but it just was between me and Epi's schedules, we were just really swamped. So hopefully we're going to probably do that bi-weekly.
So, right. So my point is, though, if someone out there has an idea for something along the Addicted To lines, we're preparing to do some stuff, and we'd love to hear from you. So drop us a line one way or another, and it would be great. A lot of fun.
Exactly. So, Neil, take us out, Sniffles.
Okay, well, this is Billy.
Wait, I forgot almost. I'm really drunk. Neil, where can we find you?
Oh, yes.
His cough medicine is affecting me, too.
Yeah, I love that NyQuil. Good stuff.
Neil, it's for nighttime.
Let me speak, please. I want to get through this podcast. You can reach me at Neil Weiser, N-E-A-L-W-I-S-E-R, on Twitter and neilweiser.com. I'm also at odmgrp.com. It's the ODM group. We just put up our new site, and we're getting that fixed up. We have a few more things to do with that and getting the blog back up and running with some posts. So I'll be posting there a lot and posting links as well, too. Seth, where are you?
You can find me at Seth Goldstein, S-E-T-H-G-O-L-D-S-T-I-N, on Twitter. You can, of course, find me at SethGoldstein.net. You can find out where else I am online, which is a lot of places. That's by going to SethGoldstein.me. And our lovely Snow White, who's not here right now, the princess of A2SM, Jody Raines, can be found at Sunswept on Twitter. And Jody Raines pretty much everywhere else. Her site is webmarcom.net. And she blogs a lot over at her blog at webmarcom.net/blog. So she'll be back next week. She had some chamber issues to deal with. So we missed you, Jody.
Not that she had chamber issues to deal with. It sounds like her chamber pot is overflowing or something. She went to an event.
Oh. she went to a Chamber of Commerce event, not her chamber pot event. Neil.
Anyway,
this
has been the Addicted Social Media Podcast. I'm Neil Weiser.
I'm Seth Goldstein.
And we really thank you guys for being here, and that's great. Anyways, I know in the spirit of Snow White, I know how to take us out. Ready?
Oh, God, I'm worried.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go. Hi-ho. All right, that's enough.
We lost people. Anyhow, see you later, guys.
Bye.